Chapter 13. The Long Sleep. All that Sergeant Abdazel Magron could hear in the confines of his power suit was the sound of his own breathing. Many long hours had passed since the joint destruction of both the Rebel World Eater's base and the Loyalist Task Force, including the battleship Imperial Vengeance. The stars wheeled sedately around him. He was spinning helplessly, aware that rescue was impossible. After a long time, he realized that he had still clutched his chainsword and his gauntlet, though he must have unpowered it at some point. In resignation, he placed it in his scabbard clasp. It was inevitable that a man of deep religious convictions would reflect on the course of his life in such a situation. Life proper had begun for Sergeant Magron at the age of 7, when he had been taken from his home world of Duthoven, a wild world of stormy seas, thunderous skies, mountainous archipelagos, and strong-muscled men who had learned to navigate their entire planet in flimsy catamarans. The strength and boldness of the Duthonians was famous. It was what had brought the Dark Angel recruiters there, in search of future legionaries. Abdazel Magron's training had begun immediately in the fortress monastery on Caliban. He could not even remember now what his native name had been. By tradition, Dark Angel novices took new names, but of the 300 boys in his intake, he alone had survived the rigours of that early training. He had then served for 20 years in a scout company attached to the Lufa Regiment, a signal honour, for the Lufa Regiment was the most respected of all the 19 regiments in the Dark Angels chapter. It was in a scout company that a prospective space marine proved his worth, often sent into the thick of battle, wearing only light flak armour, dispatched on the most perilous of missions, completely alone. It was the most testing ordeal that a man could be put through, and the fatality rate was high. 1,000 scouts had been inducted along with Magron. Only 6 survived to eventually become Space Marines. The day he was selected was the most glorious of his life. Then he had begun the biological enhancements, the additional organs, the additional glands to increase his weight, strength, and stature, the enhanced senses, the implants to allow him to interface with his power armor, and above all, the gene seed to allow it all to work, taken from his spiritual leader, Primarch Lionel Johnson. Then, also, he had been fitted with his power armor. How deferential had been the armorers who had adjusted it to his individual person. How they had admired him. Now he was a space marine. That was when the real training had begun. Everything else but a preliminary. It had lasted 10 years. Yet the most important aspect had been the religious side, in Magron's estimation. Without religion, without total devotion to the Emperor, a Dark Angel Space Marine was but an unfinished thing. Which was what had made the defection of entire legions of Space Marines to Horus the Warmaster, once the Emperor's most trusted companion and friend, now the greatest of arch traitors, so incomprehensible to him. A procession of images welled up in Sergeant Magron's memory, like a panorama which he panned from one end to the other through the 230 years of his life. The campaigns in which he had served, the battles in which he had fought, from one end of the galaxy to the other. He had even stood alongside the legendary Luther, the Legion's second in command, as a companion in arms, and he had been in the presence of the Legion's blessed leader, Primarch Lionel Johnson himself. Yet his most precious memories were of the religious ceremonies and the occasional large-scale festivals, all devoted to the veneration for the Divine Emperor. Such veneration was the core of Brother Sergeant Abdazel Magron's being, as he drifted in total solitude, a row of silver campaign studs dinted into his forehead. His greatest regret now was that he was out of the fight, and the traitor legions were still undefeated. His reflection finished. The distant stars still wheeled past his visor, as they would for all eternity, leaving him with but one more duty to perform. A Space Marine's life did not belong to him. It belonged to the Emperor. No effort had been spared to make him what he was. Therefore, he was expected to preserve himself whenever possible, in all conditions. So it would have been a dereliction of duty for Sergeant Abdesel Magron not to follow the one option still available. He activated the suspension of animation membrane in his brain. Of all the implanted organs which made a space marine more than a man, the Suzanne organ was perhaps the least used, but he used it now. One by one it closed down all his biological and psychic functions. His heart slowed, then stopped. His metabolism reduced itself to zero. All his muscles became quiescent. His nerve and brain cells ceased firing. His whole body was blanketed with an electric field to kill any bacteria which might still be alive. And then that field was switched off. In such a state, a space marine could survive for centuries. In Magron's case, the survival period was to be extended indefinitely. His power suit responded to the Suzanne signal by testing its own physical environment. It discovered that environment to be hard vacuum, particularly favourable for long-term storage. It therefore arranged for the evacuation of air from the suit. It shut down all its own functions, allowing the near-total frigidity of interstellar space, the closest thing to absolute zero, to permeate the body of Abdesel Magron. The Dark Angel was now essentially no different from any other lump of matter drifting between the stars. Elsewhere, the history of the Imperium continued. The War of the Horus Heresy ground on. The Dark Angel's chapter itself was cleft in two by the conflict, incredible though that would have seemed to Sergeant Magron, with the trusted but treacherous Lufa siding with Chaos. The Emperor met the demon-possessed Warmaster Horus in single combat, defeating him at the cost of such dreadful injuries that only everlasting imprisonment within the Golden Throne would preserve his life. Hardened though he was, Magron would have wept had he known what had happened. Centuries passed, and stretched into millennia. The vast task of reconstructing the Imperium went patiently on. The Adeptus Astartes was reorganized. Planets were scoured, sacrificing countless billions in a sacred effort to rescue the purity of the human race. The dreadful forces of Chaos were driven out, able to take refuge in the Eye of Terror only because the depleted Loyalist forces were insufficient to eradicate them completely. As for the Emperor and his Golden Throne, the palace surrounding it expanded until it covered an entire continent. The cult of the Emperor became the religious mainstay of the galaxy. Of all this, the deanimated space marine knew nothing. His inert body drifted slowly, aimlessly. Every few centuries, answering to some vestigial function, the Suzanne membrane stirred and began to restore mental awareness to the frozen brain. Sergeant Magron would find himself dreaming. He would even wake up, blearily, and see glimmering stars wheeling past his visor as before, and enter into reveries of remembrance for what seemed like ageless periods, but were in fact only a minute or so at a time, while membrane and suit, using the last few ergs of energy still remaining in the power pack, tested the environment and decided that the time to reawaken had not come yet, if it was ever to come, and put him back into death-like sleep. In this way, Sergeant Magron reviewed his life yet again. He even recovered memories of his infancy on Duthaan. He relived his most dangerous mission as a scout, trekking across a desert to gain intelligence on a band of orcs. He was captured by them, tortured for days and left for dead, later revived by chapter apothecaries by means of treatment almost as painful. He relived the engagement in the deep tunnels of a world without an external atmosphere, inhabited by aliens who had preserved their remaining air by retreating into the crust of the planet, to be trapped 10 miles down amid the collapsing tunnels of a doomed alien warren was a nightmare, even for him. Particularly vivid was the dream in which he and one of his battle brothers, a Captain Zabdak Abadas, had been the sole survivors from an entire company dropped on a death world in an attempt to recover standard template construction material from a crashed navy ship. a dreadful episode. The planet boasted monsters able to crush space marine armor like eggshells and almost impervious to bolter fire or anything else. Others of the company had sacrificed themselves to give him and Abadas a chance of reaching the wreck. This had spurred them on against impossible odds. The dream faded, to be replaced later by another. He could not know, of course, that Suzanne was preserving him for thousands of years. It seemed to him that the periods of oblivion were brief, yet, all unknown to him, something was changing. Though the nearest stars were light years away, even at those immense distances, some minute gravitational influx was exerted. Given sufficiently long periods of time, a small object began to weave a course among them. The Mark IV armor, with its frozen occupant, traversed light year after light year, steadily gaining velocity. Close to 10 millennia passed, at the end of which time the now defunct power suit became lost amidst a huge shell of gas and dust, having the appearance of a vast nebula. Obscured within that nebula lay a swirl of stars and star clusters. Strange indeed are the ways of the warp. Somehow it had influenced Magron's millennia-long drift. Somehow it had attracted his inert form. Now he was being drawn through the suffusing outer garment of the Eye of Terror. Once within, he moved more swiftly, this time in defiance of the laws of physics. Further centuries passed, in which the warp nudged him into the great warpstorm's whirlpool motion. It seemed as though the souls of brother dark angels were calling to him, drawing him on. To and fro he wavered. Then he seemed to head straight inwards, until he came to a particular star cluster, strangely shaped. Being deanimated, he could not see that impossible shape, or the equally impossible shapes of the stars composing it, or, as he came among them, of the planets circling those stars. By now, he was moving with the speed of a spaceship, yet, from no evident outside cause, he slowed. The light of a strange sun was warming the casing of his armour. Gradually, degree by degree, his body emerged from a temperature low enough to liquefy helium. Gently, he came to the edge of an atmosphere, belonging to a planet that was not a planet, but whose surface was foliated into great curved awnings, coloured rose pink, each one a continent. Sergeant Abdazel Magron should now have fallen through the atmosphere like a flaming meteor, armour and man burning up together. He did not. He drifted gently down, as if being lowered on a bed of rose petals, and after many an hour came to rest on a pleasant meadow. The impossible sun was in the sky. A warm breeze laden with perfumes wafted over the suit as it lay upon its back. And now the only function remaining in Magron's body, a function belonging to the Suzanne membrane itself, came into play. It was able to sense that the Dark Angel was once more in a friendly environment, or at least one which he could survive. It began the process of reanimation. This itself took a fairly long time. The human body, even a superhuman body, could not be started up in an instant. It was not like switching on an engine. Magron's muscles trembled ever so slightly as his somatic cells came alive. Liver, intestines, kidneys, spleen, the pancreas came into readiness, as did all the extra organs implanted in him more than 10,000 years ago. Nerve cells began firing. Faintly at first, his two hearts began to beat, and his space marine blood, far more efficient than that of normal marines, began to flow through his veins. His brain cells began firing, preparing the ascending reticule system to arouse the frontal cortex. This did not happen immediately. For some days, Magron lay in a coma, and days after that he spent in dreams, weirder than he had ever experienced. Then, Magron woke up. He was in complete darkness, and unable to move, so that at first he believed he was dead, a disembodied spirit drifting through the sea of souls. The reason for his immobility was simple. So long had been Magron's sojourn that his suit's power pack had drained itself of all energy. His helmet's sensory devices no longer had power by which to function and were dead, unable to supply signals to his brain. The coils and cables for moving the heavy suit were equally inert. The abutments between armor plates had become stiff, making it impossible to move the suit at all by muscle power alone. But one thing eventually convinced Magron that he was, after all, alive. He was breathing, and therefore had a corporeal form. This was due to the foresight of the suit's designers, for the pump, which should have fed him oxygen, was also dead, and in a completely sealed suit he would have suffocated where he lay, once the oxygen stored in his liver ran out. Therefore, thousands of years before, when the energy reading of the power pack sank to near zero, the suit had carried out one last tiny action with its final few ergs. It had opened up an orifice to the outside, just large enough to allow Magron to draw his breath should he find himself in an oxygenated atmosphere. He had, of course, no idea how much time had passed. He did not know where he was or got there. He had not expected ever to be revived, and as no one had communicated with him or rescued him from the depowered suit, he now expected slowly to starve to death. Entombed as he was, he neither saw nor heard anything around him, though the air he breathed was pleasantly perfumed. So he did not know that denizens of the remade planet had found him, had walked all around him, and had recoiled in horror as the hated Imperial eagle, which was still discernible on his breastplate, through all the erosion wrought by his long sojourn. They knew that this was a space marine, albeit an enemy space marine. So in the end, making obeisance, showing cringing respect, they took the news to another who bore the same colours, though hardly the same emblems. The fallen angel took his time travelling to the place. He looked carefully over the recumbent figure, reading everything the suit's emblems and sigils told him, including the Dark Angel's identity. He also recognized the type of armor the Space Marine wore. It belonged to the same era as his own. Outwardly, Captain Abadas expressed no surprise. The fantastical was not surprising in the Eye of Terror. But inwardly, he was astonished. The power armor's external skin was strangely scored and pitted, as though it had spent long centuries naked in space. Otherwise, it was unchanged, in stark contrast to his own. This was no Chaos Space Marine. He could hear the suit's occupant breathing. "Raise him to his feet," he ordered. This was a difficult task. Ropes were required. But eventually, the bulky figure, a very emblem of warrior might, had been placed upright. The power suit did not collapse. The stiffness of its plate abutments was sufficient to hold it erect, as Captain Abadas had guessed. He walked around the stiff figure. Coming to the rear, he saw that the solar converters at the back of the hulking shoulder mountings were covered in a thick layer of dust, which had been attracted there by the electrical charge on the silicon panels. He barked orders. Someone fetched a soft cloth and cleansed the surfaces until they gleamed ebony black. Slowly, a trickle of energy fed through to the sensory systems, dimly at first but growing stronger. Sergeant Abdazel Magron began to see. Captain Abadas waited patiently while the storage charge built up before he spoke.
"Do you know me, Brother Sergeant Magron?" he inquired in a hollow voice. "I am Captain Abadas of the 3rd Regiment."
A voice, gruff, weak, disbelieving, muffled by the Space Marine's helm, there was not enough power yet to work the external speaker, came through the breathing apparatus opened by the suit.
"Brother Captain Abadas, is that really you? What has happened to you?"
Abadas repeated his question.
"Do you know me, Brother Sergeant?"
"I know you, Brother Captain,"
Magron whispered faintly.
"Then let me help you, Brother."
Captain Abadas placed his hand on the emergency charge port on the sergeant's backpack. There was a fizzing and a glow as he delivered power into the drained storage unit, creaking at first, The suit came to life.
Come with me, Sergeant.
And Sergeant Abdazel Magron of the Dark Angels Legion stepped towards his new future. It was as though the two met fully armoured on a battlefield. Magron experienced a flashback. He could not help but be reminded of the time he and Abadas had stood together on a death world, expecting never again to see Caliban or to receive benediction in one of the fortress monasteries. Abadas had not been armoured then as he was now. Magron was able to recognise his power suit as originally a Mark III, designed mainly for boarding actions and tunnel fighting. Magron had worn one himself in the bowels of the de-atmosphered alien world. The Mark III was especially brutal-looking in its appearance, with its thick wedge of a helmet and its additional frontal armour plates. But the suit worn by Abadas had been transformed somehow. It was as if the external shell had become an organic thing and begun to sprout cancers, putting out multicoloured growths, a stag-like structure extended from the top of the helmet. The Imperial Eagle was gone from the breastplate, as was the regimental badge from the right shoulder casing. Both had been replaced by curious designs he did not know. The chapter badge remained, but it had been oddly distorted and elaborated, as was Abadas's badge of rank. They stood outside a wooden cabin, which apparently was the captain's quarters here. A space marine was tough-minded, able to adapt to changing circumstances, but this was the strangest place Magron had ever been in. The ground was composed of a pink, crystalline substance, which, however, was carpeted with a mossy or crystalline growth of the same colour and translucency. It was also strewn with roses, which appeared to grow straight out of that crystal ground, without benefit of any bush. Not far off lay the margins of a forest, which again sprouted roses but of immense size. The overhead panorama offered what was the real enchantment. Half the sky was open and clear. Evidently, Magron was in a star cluster, for stars shone through even in daylight. The sky was pale mauve in colour, almost white. Halfway up from the horizon, there shone a pink sun, shaped like a rose. And the other half of the sky, it was like an awning, a solid structure, also pink. Magron guessed it was of the same substance as the ground, but it cast little or no shadow, apparently offering no resistance to sunlight. Even a few stars could be seen through it, though faintly. Altogether, this was a world of magical beauty. Sergeant Magron had no idea how he had arrived here, but it was his duty to report to Captain Abadas. If this was, in truth, Captain Abadas. He spoke up.
Captain, why are you armoured? Is this an engagement?
Engagement, or no, I remain armoured,
came the enigmatic reply. Magron hesitated, then continued.
Captain, may I see your face?
A sardonic chuckle came from within the sharp-edged helm.
Do you suspect that I merely impersonate your brother and superior officer, that I have stolen his armour? Very well, Sergeant Magron. Be reassured.
Abadas reached up, unfastened the clamps of the encrusted helm and removed it. His square-jawed, bleak face stared out from between the hulking shoulder encasements. Magron studied that face carefully. It was much as he remembered, and of no greater age, but bleaker and more impassive, as if the officer had forgotten how to use facial expression. There was, too, despite its stony quality, an almost unnatural vitality, a glaring sense of willpower.
Do you remember when we stood together on the death world, Brother Sergeant, with a whole company lost?
Captain, Magron burst out, why do you not wear the Imperial Eagle?
I will explain presently, Brother Sergeant. First, make your report. How did you come to this world?
May I remove my armour, Captain?
Abadas stood unmoving for a moment or two, as though the request surprised him. Then he turned his head and uttered a call in a low, hallowing voice. From the fringe of the forest, his body slaves ran forth, heads low. In clipped tones, he ordered them to assist Magron. They slunk to him like curs, aiding him to strip himself of the power suit until he stood on the rose plain in his black one-piece utility garment. Their demeanour was certainly nothing like that of the servitors who would have performed the same service on Caliban. Magron swayed slightly. Now that he was divested of the support of the suit, his bodily functions were still struggling to return to normal after the Suzanne.
"Now, Sergeant, your report."
Magron related everything that had happened, the destruction of the World Eater's interstellar base, along with the task force sent to neutralize it, how he had been cast adrift in space and had gone into Suzanne. He knew that almost 100 standard Imperial years had passed since then. That was when the suit's timer had ceased functioning. But nothing else, especially how he came to be lying on this pleasant world. Abadas was not entirely pleased to hear the story. He had hoped that Sergeant Magron had found his way into the eye of his own will, a newly committed Chaos Renegade. Instead, his continued devotion to the Emperor and his hatred of the rebels were both clear from his words. Just the same, his arrival could be no accident. The siren lure of chaos spreading through the warp and through all space-time, especially in the period of the rebellion, had drawn him here. And for Magron and Abadas, who were possibly the only two Dark Angels in the Eye, to have met up in this manner could not be coincidence. Abadas believed that it was his will and his need for comradeship of another Dark Angel that had brought the sergeant here.
"Tell me, Brother Captain," Magron said, "how long have I been in suspended animation? Where are we now?"
Captain Abadas thought long before he replied. His main care had to be for his brother Dark Angel's salvation, to bring him on to the right path and away from his misguided loyalty. This was going to be difficult. While Sergeant Magron was fighting the renegade World Eaters, Captain Abadas had been on Caliban, listening to the inspiring words of Luther, hearing how Primarch Lionel Johnson had betrayed them and had stolen all the glory for himself. Abadas was not Luther. He did not have his ability to persuade men out of even their deepest convictions. A certain amount of guile was going to be needed. And what was truth? What was falsehood? Where chaos ruled, one could not always say which was which. And where time was concerned, whose time should he use as an answer, Magron's or his own?
"Time does not mean what it did," he said at last. "It is no longer the tyrant it was. One could say that the events you spoke of took place about 200 years ago."
This puzzling response caused Magron to frown. He looked again at the alien device on the captain's breastplate, as if the inkling of an awful possibility was beginning to penetrate his understanding.
"Then the foul rebels are long ago crushed," he stated, as if daring Abadas to say otherwise.
And Captain Abadas then took a decision. He was recalling the advice he had once received from one wise in the ways of Zench. "Tell the truth, only if a lie will not serve."
"Brother Sergeant," he said in a voice of command, "give me your bolter and chainsword."
Magron took a step back, not liking this order from one armoured as Captain Abadas was, lacking the Imperial Eagle.
Abadas glowered. "Sergeant," he added in a more conciliatory tone, "you are still suffering from the after effects of Suzanne. Your judgment is not to be depended upon. Before I explain your situation, you will surrender your weapons to me. Or have you come to the stage where you will disobey an order from a superior officer?"
This rebuke had its effect. Magron reached down to the discarded power armor, unclamped both bolter and chainsword, and threw them at Abadas's feet.
"What I have to tell you," Abadas said in a slow, measured tone, "once this was done, will be hard for you to accept or even comprehend. Therefore, prepare yourself. The rebellion led by War Master Horus succeeded. The Emperor is dead, killed by Horus himself in single combat, though Horus too died of his injuries. Lionel Johnson is dead. The Chaos Powers, if you know what those are, rule the galaxy.
A space marine can be put to the extremities of torture, physical and mental, and scarcely flinch. He can face horrors that would send ordinary men insane. But as Sergeant Abdazel Magron heard these words, the world went dark before his eyes. He felt himself tremble. He might have fallen in a faint, had not Captain Abadas, power fibre whining softly, stepped forward to support him with his huge gauntlets.
"Stand on your feet, Space Marine. You must endure the worst."
Magron groaned. He cursed himself for having gone into Suzanne to be revived in a galaxy without the Emperor. Horrible, unbelievable, impossible to bear. Stricken, he looked into Abadas's flinty grey eyes.
"Who is the Emperor now?"
The first hint of an emotional reaction flickered on Abadas's face.
"What need have we of an Emperor?" he roared. "We have the Chaos Gods."
Magron had heard of these. Chapter chaplains had delivered sermons on them when the rebellion broke out, the greatest threat mankind had ever had to face, malevolent intelligences. From beyond the physical universe, worse than the worst of aliens, bent on subjecting mankind to the most abominable and unimaginable perversions and degradations, against which the Emperor was the only shield.
"And our chapter?" he quivered. "It still exists, Sergeant. We are still brothers."
He paused, as though weighing the words he was about to speak.
"I, too, was faithful. I slew many of my battle brothers who had pledged themselves to the War Master. Now do you see why I demand your weapons from you, Sergeant? At one time, to hear what you are now hearing would have caused me to launch myself at the speaker with everything at my disposal. Only at the end, with the Emperor already dead, was I able to see the truth. The Emperor was denying mankind its destiny for the sake of personal power. Warmaster Horus made the ultimate sacrifice so as to free us."
"You speak blasphemy, Captain."
"Once it would indeed have been blasphemy. Now it is historical fact."
Abadas gestured to the glowing rose sun and the rose-pink canopy spread across half the sky.
"Look about you. Look what we can achieve now the Emperor's restrictions have been cast off. The ability to shape worlds, to climb to heaven. Men may become as gods if they have the nerve. There is nothing now that may not be accomplished."
Abadas was using his emotion-sensing chaos gift to observe his brother Dark Angel closely. A pre-heresy space marine's emotions were stripped down and finely honed. Essentially, he had only two, determination and allegiance. Determination to overcome every enemy and allegiance to the Emperor and his Imperium. Worship of the Emperor had been more strongly inculcated in the Dark Angels than any other legion. Abadas could see, as clearly as he could see the rose-strewn quartz medal wall around him, the black despair that was engulfing Magron on hearing of the death of the Emperor and the destruction of his cause. It passed over his whole body like a boiling dark cloud. It was inevitable that eventually he would discover that his captain had been lying to him. Abadas's task was to ensure that, by then, he would approve of the intention behind those lies. Magron's devotion had to be redirected. It needed a powerful focus if he were to come to hate and revile the Emperor in the Golden Throne. He would have to be seduced into the service of one of the ruinous powers. Abadas already knew which one it would be. Magron would accept no other. Khorne, god of battle, god of honour, god of blood. He felt a presence and glanced above. Sergeant Magron followed his gaze and recoiled, doubting his sanity. For a fleeting moment, he had thought to see a face spanning the entire visible sky, a dog or wolf's face with glaring red eyes, topped with a three-horned helmet, the middle horn like a unicorn's horn. The vision gave him the feeling of being an ant trapped in a jar, while some far huger animal looked down on him. He would have taken it for a hallucination, another after-effect of the Suzanne, had not Captain Abadas evidently seen the apparition too.
"What was that?" Magron barked.
"A chaos being,"
Abadas answered, his tone unperturbed.
"A greater demon. They are the only ones who can adopt any size like that. This planet is finished. We have better leave. You will find much to give you satisfaction in your new life, brother. Get back into your power suit and follow me."
Magron stared at him.
"May I remind you, Captain, that you have renounced your vows to the Emperor, vows which we both swore. By what right do you command me?"
"You can plead yourself, Brother Sergeant,"
Abadas said, replacing his helmet, his voice changing as he did so, now issuing from the external speaker.
"But a strategic withdrawal is what I strongly advise."
He lumbered off towards the large metallic structure Magron had already noticed lying sprawled against the fringe of the nearby forest. Magron looked up a second time and spotted a scattering of glints against the pale mauve backdrop. He did not need to be told what they were. Drop pods. He had reinserted himself into the recharged armour without any help this time, when one of the pods, a very roughly made affair indeed, banged down onto the meadow and fell apart. From the wreckage rampaged a nightmare mob such as Magron had never seen before. At first, he fought it a motley collection of vicious aliens, some in the weirdest of armour, far stranger than Abadas's, some naked, some wearing criss-cross straps of cured hide, from which hung severed heads, limbs, torn-out hearts and livers, some draped in bloody entrails, some slashing themselves so as to luxuriate in blood as they ran. Then he realised what they were. Mutations. Probably they had all been human once. As he looked on the snarling animal faces, the chittering insect faces, the grotesque bodies that were running towards him, stumbling, pushing one another over in their haste, Sergeant Magron felt chilled to his soul. The Emperor dead. The galaxy given over to chaos. Yes, there was beauty in it. The planet on which he stood gave testament to that. But the chaplains had been right too. There was foulness and degeneracy. Captain Abadas paused to turn and fire a storm of bolter shots at the onrushing crowd, creating carnage. Another drop pod smashed itself to pieces further off, and then another. Magron retrieved his own bolt gun and chainsword, though the latter was probably drained of power, and set his suit in motion, following his battle brother, who climbed through an opening in what Magron took to be a brass statue of a large but loathsome beast, and beckoned him to follow. Bullets from primitive stub guns rattled off his armour as he seized hold of the edges of the opening and hauled himself through. The opening sealed itself seamlessly behind him, as though the skin of the structure had merely flowed into itself. He found himself in a roughened, lumpy interior. The beast shape appeared to have been cast in one piece in a mould, but to have been done roughly. The interior swirled with once molten metal. The space was long and narrow, giving the armoured men just enough room to stand. Light came from the redly glowing patches in the roof, and from two thick windows forward. These were where the eyes of the reptilian beast would be. They admitted life onto a shelf or sill, supporting a cursory set of controls, consisting of two or three moulded brass hand grips, surrounded by a low rail, like that of a tray. The arrangement confirmed to Magron that this was a vehicle of some sort. There was no place to sit, however, either at the controls or anywhere. Wherever the vehicle took one, one travelled standing. Hammers, axes, claws and fists began banging and scratching on the hull. There was a concerted howling of frustration and hatred. Other attackers, having climbed up the front legs somehow, snarled through the forward windows, attempting to smash the steel glass, or whatever substance it was, with any weapons they wielded, or else with their own demented-featured heads. Because these were windows and not the usual view screens used in spacecraft, Magron had assumed that the odd vehicle was an aircraft of some sort, able to fly through the atmosphere only. He was wrong. Standing in the nose of the craft, Abadas wrenched two of the controls. The beast ship let out a roar. Magron was bemused to see the interior of the hull flex itself, as though the metal were flesh. Then it leapt into the air, dislodging the bestial invaders which clung to its lumpy surface. Looking past Abadas and through the round window eyes, Magron saw the pale mauve sky turn a deep purple, in which the delicate pink petals of the sun blazed. Abadas flipped the beast ship round, allowing Magron a view of the planet below them. He was amazed to see the same figure of a rose basking in the pink light of the rose sun, and all around them spread great sheets of stars and gas, which, Abadas assured him, were formed into an even vaster rose, the Rose Cluster.
"How is it possible?"
Magron breathed, returning his gaze to the strange form of his one-time comrade in arms in his multicoloured, chaos-mutated power armour.
"I told you, we have the power to shape worlds. The intelligence which created this marvel must have liked roses."
Magron wondered whether any segment of the old Imperium would be recognisable to him now. Perhaps it had all been reshaped, even the stars rearranged.
"What sort of intelligence accomplished this?" he asked. "A man or a chaos power, a demon, as you said?"
Abadas gave a sardonic chuckle.
"What difference does it make? I told you, men can become like gods now. Anything is possible for us. Our infancy is behind us."
He took his hands from the control levers and turned to face Magron, the sharp-angled wedge of his helmet tilting downwards slightly as if to regard him with a steely frown.
"This is what the Emperor denied us, Sergeant. He was like a parent who would not let his children take their place in the world, for fear of what might happen to them. To justify his restrictions, he demanded worship. But the children were made of sterner stuff. They revolted and became free. And that swarm of mutations we have just left behind us."
Abadas was silent for a spell, thinking how proud Magron would be when he received his first chaos rewards, foul and monstrous though they might seem to him now.
"You are still in the Emperor's nursery, Sergeant," he said, his voice becoming softer. "You wish to limit freedom to what the Emperor would find acceptable. Later, you will think differently. But enough of that. You were born for war, seasoned and modified to be a warrior. Even the Emperor fitted you for war and offered you honour and glory. Here in the Chaos Realm, you shall have war."
It would have suited Abadas just as well to have quit the Rose Cluster and seek adventure elsewhere. But his care for Magron stayed him. The Rose Cluster was about to be engulfed in a conflict. Magron's progress would be swifter if he were drawn into it. He steered the nose of the beast ship into the cluster. There was no need here for the detailed calculations and headings accompanying space travel outside the Chaos Realm. Zench was the lord of ways and courses. Magron heard him intone the resounding, unintelligible words of the magic spell of destination. The beast ship roared quietly, like an animal, warning off rivals from its territory. Abadas took his hands from the levers. The beast ship would find its own way now, guided by the warp itself. He turned his attention to helping his brother Dark Angel check his power suit after its long sojourn in the void. There were many adjustments to be made. It was a miracle that it was so undamaged, so undecayed, after so long a time. Much longer than he had led Magron to believe. No, he corrected himself. It was design, not accident. The design of chaos. He made the same point to Magron.
"You have been sent to me, Brother Sergeant. How do you imagine you came to be lying in the meadows on Rhodonius? Did you expect ever to be revived after going into Suzanne in interstellar space? No. You expected to drift in the void forever. The Chaos Gods helped you and have shown you the respect due to a warrior. Do not spurn their beneficence. I cannot disown the Emperor. I am sworn. All vows are dissolved when death intervenes, Abadas reminded him. He held out his gauntlet for Magron's chainsword, recharged its stacked atom power, and tested it for efficiency. It still worked, but the usually vicious buzz was ragged.
The motor needs returning, he observed. We will find a tech wizard.
I can do it myself, Magron responded grumpily. He checked his bolt gun and bolt pistol, and found both in working order, but the ammunition degraded. He accepted fresh magazines from Abadas.
Now you must rest, Brother Sergeant. Your body needs to recuperate from Suzanne, and trials lie ahead.
What is our heading, Brother Captain?
We go to another star in the cluster.
It puzzled Magron that Abadas was still fully clad in his extra bulky Mark III power armor, with all its chaos excrescences, as though unaware of how confined his movements were made. He had not even removed his helmet, which Space Marines often did, even in the heat of battle. Magron had piled his own equipment at the rear of the narrow cavity. As far as he could judge, this took up about half the length of the peculiar craft. From the rear came the growling, roaring sound of the engine. Magron lay on his back on the metal floor. Although the captain's advice was good, he decided not to go into sleep proper. Instead, he used the catalepsian node implanted in his brain, which made it possible to rest half of his brain at a time and so stay alert. Several hours passed. Magron, feeling rested but still full of bewilderment and grief, rose to his feet. Abadas stood silently in the nose of the ship, looking out. The soft roar from the engines could still be heard. Through the windows, he noted that the stars of the cluster seemed to be moving visibly, which should not happen at real space speeds.
When do we go into the warp, Captain?
Abadas turned ponderously to glance back at him.
We are not going into the warp. We are already travelling faster than light.
Magron stared at the stars again. They were flowing with a fluid motion, their colour changing as they passed by, phasing from violet to red.
Yes, you think it impossible,
Abadas said gruffly,
contrary to the laws of nature. Well, what did I tell you?
Is this how all space travel is accomplished now? Magron asked. Through the galaxy?
Abadas decided to tell the truth for once.
No, he admitted. Only in a limited region, and that but recently. I do not know why. But I think one of the great demon lords has devised it as an aid to space travel. As you can see, it is far easier than journeying through the warp.
Magron asked himself how it was possible to see stars at all if one outran the light they shone by, trying to look into the warp with one's physical sense of sight. Though few had ever tried it, yielded nothing, just blankness.
You speak of demons. It is just a name for the intelligences which aid the chaos gods.
A star loomed up out of the close-packed field of stars that comprised just one astronomically vast petal of the cosmic rose. How the ship had found a way to it, Magron had little idea, for Abadas had appeared to do little by way of navigation. Now, however, he grasped the brass handles again. The ship veered and slowed. The bubbled, roughened walls of the interior creaked and bent slightly. Astonishingly, the control sill of the ship bore no instruments that Magron could see, no star tabulator to locate their position, or magnifier to examine the worlds of the planetary system. They might as well have been sailing a raft through a group of islands without even the help of a compass. They were approaching a planet superficially identical to the one they had left, its surface foiled in shining petals, at least on the sunlit side. Abadas steered them towards the crown of the rose, and here was something new. At first, it seemed like a sparkling diamond or dewdrop. Then, as they descended, it revealed itself as a city of large proportions, perched athwart the tightly clustered rose petals, with towers soaring upward.
Magron felt as though he did indeed look down on a simple flower, in whose folds tiny civilizations dwelt. The B-ship sank among those towers, and there the true stature revealed themselves. Magron peered through the window eyes, entranced despite himself. This was not like the grim cities of the Imperium he had known. It was a fairy-tale city, resplendent in the pink sunlight. The B-ship grounded itself on a broad plaza. The side of the vehicle flowed open, revealing a broad view. There was a crowd on the plaza, but Magron took little notice of that at first. His gaze was on the city beyond, with its graceful towers, its arcades and boulevards, its delicate stonework and solemn temples. Abadas interrupted his reverie.
"You have a decision to make, brother. As I said long ago, the age you have known has ended, and our chapter has survived the transformation into a new age, albeit scattered far and wide. You must adapt to the new universe. Look, see what is coming."
He pointed a gauntlet, indicating the sky. What appeared to be metal motes were glinting far above. Rapidly they grew, and it became clear what they were. An invasion fleet was descending, though without any semblance of order. A motley collection of hundreds or even thousands of craft hove into view, many resembling the beast ship but larger, their twisted, gnarled metal shapes like cast-offs from some furnace or forge, but all showing an unnatural influence which could not have been the work of man. Ships with kicking monster legs, ships with gesticulating arms and tentacles, ships with bestial faces that grimaced, ships that spewed blood on the fair city below.
"This star system is being invaded," Abadas told Magron. "I go now to join this city's defenders. The choice is yours. I beseech you to remember our brotherhood. Remember our defeated emperor, if you will. But if you remember these things, then remember also that I am your captain. Armor yourself and follow me."
Abadas's words flashed reminiscences into Magron's brain. How he had admired this stern, impassive Space Marine officer. The episode on the Death World? Then Magron had accepted that they were doomed, like the rest of the company, the expedition a failure. Not so Abadas. The cool, implacable captain had found a way out, not only to survive, but to complete their mission as well. In truth, Abadas had left him no choice at all. Magron hurried to don his armour. Abadas did not wait for him. He departed. Magron soon followed, rechecking his weapons as he did so. Bolter, bolt pistol, chainsword, short sword. The one weapon he had not thought to inspect, but he examined it now for straightness and keenness of edge. As his armoured boots crashed onto the broad esplanade, Abadas casually reached out, demanding the blade from him. With one swipe, he dashed it against a nearby marble statue of some alien-winged creature. The blade shattered into a dozen pieces. 100 centuries in the near zero of interstellar space had weakened it. As the Chaos Space Marine had surmised, he reached out into his suit scabbard and handed a replacement to Magron.
"That would not serve you. Take this."
Magron accepted the blade. It was wavy with eerie hues running along its sinuous length. Unfamiliar runes were engraved on both sides. The hilt was cast as a serpent, which made him reluctant to grasp it. Nevertheless, he placed it in his scabbard. For the first time, he examined the crowd assembled on the plaza. These were knights, warriors, fighting men, in all types of armour or none at all. Nearly all, Magron noted, were abnormal in some way. The city was evidently stricken with a disease which caused congenital deformities. It would have been cleansed in the old Imperium. Many people, however, were unarmed and seemed normal. And these were now running in terror as the ships descended, seeking to hide in the magnificent buildings lining the square. A knight, in armour of gleaming beetle blue, called out to Abadas.
"Do you follow, zench, or corn?"
Abadas bellowed in response.
I fight for Zench.
It was clear now that the invading fleet was putting down over a wide area. Artillery pieces were flinging aloft, blue laser blasts and seething plasma balls, trying to destroy the tumbling invaders before they landed. Only one craft made for the plaza, and that was a huge, flying edifice, crowned with towers like a cathedral and seemingly built of sparkling white stone. As it settled, a droning could be heard from inside it. Huge timber doors swung open. A congregation had been at prayer, and now it emerged. It looked at first like a pageant of banners, for every armoured member of the throng carried such a blazon over his head, held up by a pole fixed in place to the armour's backplate, after the tradition of the Adeptus Astartes. Magron had no time to inspect those banners, except to note that their designs were lurid and alien-looking. In addition, there were monstrous-looking creatures, each one different, some on mounts equally monstrous. Tramp, tramp, tramp. Those in armour disembarked in a disciplined troop. To his shock, Magron saw that it was like Space Marine armour, but grotesquely altered, as if fashioned by some demented armourer, even more so than Captain Abadas's.
"Do you still hate traitors, Brother Sergeant Magron?"
Abadas challenged.
"Then take your revenge on these, for they are Marines of the Alpha Legion, among the first to declare for Horus the War Master."
Magron stared. He now recognised the Alpha Legion colours. He also saw on some of the banners the same X-shaped emblem, with three horizontal bars he had seen when fighting the World Eaters. Rage filled Magron's heart. Bolters were now barking, creating carnage among the knights and warriors who rushed forward in a vain but valiant attempt to drive off the invaders. He let out a shout.
"For the Emperor!"
Side by side again with Captain Abadas, though his cry went unnoticed in the rising tumult, Magron strode onward. His bolter voiced its savage bark. The first bolt ricocheted from the brazenly armoured enemy, doing little damage. He would need to get closer. He loosed a short burst. He heard the explosions, but saw nothing. The shells had disappeared into a sudden darkness. He switched his suit senses to other wavelengths, but again saw nothing. For a few moments the darkness continued, and in it the noise of the battle died away. Then vision returned, but not to the clear rose light from before. The scene seemed frozen, the armoured warriors, as if caught in amber, set in a dull, muddy brown light that was the only illumination. Sergeant Magron looked up. The sun was still there, but it had changed. No longer was it a wonderful glowing pink, it had darkened to the same burnt brown colour. The fleshy-looking petals were shrivelling and collapsing in on themselves, turning almost black and becoming dimmer and dimmer. This should have revealed the rose cluster in all its full splendour, but it did not. Only the background of the stars beyond the cluster remained visible. Of the cluster itself, nothing could be seen. On the plaza, near darkness descended again. Sergeant Magron felt the paving stones beneath his boots shudder and crumble. He heard a titanic crumbling sound from far off. Looking around, he dimly saw the planet petals, which had clustered around the gorgeous city, collapsing and turning into cinders. He spoke into his comlink.
"Captain, what is happening?"
Abadas replied sourly.
"The great night is coming."
Thanks for watching, everybody. Hope you enjoyed this. Dark Angels didn't do nothing wrong. More videos coming soon. Please do remember to like this video, subscribe if you're not subscribed, and let me know in the comments what you thought. Also, if you would like to support the channel, please use the links below. I'm on Patreon, or you can become a YouTube member. And you can support me like these heroes have on the screen right now. And thank you guys to everybody who does support it. Really means a lot and helps me do these things. So yeah, thank you. And I'll be back for more very, very soon. Thanks for watching. Cheers. Bye-bye.